Okay, hi. My name is Dan Rogers. I'm a partner with Watson, Farley & Williams here in New York. And we're here today to talk about alternative financing in the shipping space. I have a distinguished panel of guests. I have first here to my left Tobias Backer, and then I have Harold Gervin, I have Joe Cipolla, and then I have, Ms. Marius Megale.
Yep.
And I would point out to begin with, we're going to start with a brief introduction. Each one will be able to say something, but let's keep it short, guys. But interestingly, we have two former Fortis guys here in Harold and in Tobias. And in my case, I found it very interesting that Joe is a former lawyer who managed to get out and do something far more fascinating than what I do today. So I'll start up here. Tobias, you want to give a little quick overview of what you do today?
Sure. I'm with Fleetscape. Fleetscape is a new company that's been set up with Oaktree. Oaktree, as many of you know, have made a lot of investments in shipping offshore. This is a little bit different in that this is a Fleetscape is a financing vehicle for shipping offshore. So we're not going out and buying bonds and or buying new buildings. We are, as we say, filling the financing gap between owner's equity and bank debt. This is essentially what I did in my former job at Icon Investments, and we're doing the same thing in Fleetscape.
Thank you. Harold, why don't you tell us what you're up to?
Yeah, ship finance, we run a fairly simple business model. It's more cash in than out. We're listed in New York with a market cap of around $1.4 billion. And a current dividend yield of around 12%. We have over 70 vessels in our portfolio with a charter backlog of around $3.7 billion and a weighted average tenor of around 9 years. I think most importantly, probably the only shipping company that not only has paid dividends every quarter since our inception in 2004, we've also been profitable each of those quarters, which makes us unique in the maritime industry.
Okay, thank you very much. Joe, tell us what you're doing at WAFRA.
Well, at WAFRA, our primary mandate's asset-based and otherwise structured finance. We've been active investors in the shipping space since around 2010. We do transactions both on our own account and more recently have formed a platform, a finance vehicle, focused on the space, headed by an industry veteran, Nick Roos, and backed by a mixture of ship owners and ship financiers as part of our expansion efforts and as indicative of our dedication to the space. So that's what's been keeping me busy most recently.
Thank you. Marius, how about you?
Just quickly about Ocean Yield. We're a dividend yield company. We were established back in 2012 by Aker ASA in Norway, and we stock listed in 2013. We now own a fleet of 34 vessels, including 3 new buildings. Everything is leased out on long-term contracts. Our EBITDA backlog is $2.9 billion with charter length of 11.1 years. We have experienced strong growth since the startup, and we have strong growth ambitions. We target $350 million in annual investments, and since the startup, we have done more than $500 million. We are a dividend yield company. We pay quarterly dividends to our shareholders, and we have raised dividends every quarter for the last 13 consecutive quarters. The dividend yield now is now about 9.6%, and our market cap is about $1 billion.
Thank you very much. The preceding panel, of course, was the bank panel, and I would describe that as probably the most traditional source of shipping finance that we are aware of, followed probably closely today by the capital markets, both debt and equity. But let's just start with talking about how your approach really differs from that. I think, Joe, maybe we'll start with you. You mentioned you have a new platform. Would you like to explain how that might be a little bit different from traditional financing?
Yeah, I think in some ways it's different, I think perhaps in the types of structures that we're able to entertain on the platform than what I understand a traditional bank to do, namely things like sale leaseback, perhaps higher LTV transactions, some capacity to do what you might call hybrid transactions where there's a debt and maybe equity kicker or profit sharing of some form type arrangement. But otherwise, in terms of the underwriting and some of the credit fundamentals, I would think we're not that different than other banks, right, or traditional sources. We're going to look to the owner of the asset, their track record in managing the asset, you know, kind of where we sit in the cycle with respect to the asset, and all the other traditional, you know, credit metrics that you might look at. There's no new magic that we have.
Let me ask a couple of questions about your answer. You mentioned higher LTVs, which I think are, of course, terribly relevant to ship owners today. What range are we really talking about?
Look, we've seen and transacted at a variety of ranges, kind of on the lower end of high LTV. I'd put a figure there at 70%, and we've seen transactions approaching, I don't know, 85%, and certainly asks for greater.
I see. And you also mentioned that you approach this from more of a traditional asset finance perspective, but how focused are you on cash flows?
Well, look, our investors are looking for a current return. That is part of our mandate. So for us, current cash flow is important. We have some flexibility to pick a round number. I like to work with round numbers. Let's say we were to arrive at a 10% figure as an appropriate all-in return for a transaction. You know, we have some flexibility to say take 8 on a current basis and get the rest deferred. But for us, you know, kind of current cash flow going back to our investors is very important. And what that's meant for us in terms of our shipping investments is, you know, where we've been deploying capital have been in sectors where there's at least some, you know, decent visibility into actually achieving that in the transaction.
Do you think there's pressure on your rate of return these days? Are you having to recalibrate expectations in what might be the new norm for the 21st century?
You know, I think for us, you know, we do other things besides ship investing. So while it is a core focus of ours, we have the luxury of being somewhat patient and perhaps you might say opportunistic. So far it hasn't yet materialized. Like, we're getting the transactions that we want and think are good done. I might react differently, you know, had I a real need to deploy capital kind of on a continuous basis.
Okay. Thank you. Marius, how about you? How would you describe your platform as different from the more traditional sources of funding?
I think we can provide a very flexible product to our clients. Compared to traditional financings or bank financing, we can provide up to 100% leverage. We can provide the tenor, I think, is very important. We can provide up to 15-year money, while typical bank and bond money is essentially 5-year, which means that you have to refinance every fourth year. So that's an advantage of our product. It's very flexible. We give away purchase option to our clients, so they capture the upside in most instances to rising asset values. And we can provide the leases that are both fixed rate interest rate leases or floating interest leases. So we can tailor-made to meet the client's needs.
I'm going to guess, since you mentioned the tenor of 15 years, which of course is, you know, quite substantial in today's market, although I know in the Chinese leasing model you might see tenors of that length as well. Are you more focused on cash flow than asset value over that period?
We mainly focus on the cash flows to our clients. And, of course, the asset value is very important for us. Of course, we want asset backing in case something goes wrong, which in shipping tends to do from time to time. But we are purely focused on the cash flows.
What do you look for in terms of a charter party that meets your parameters?
You mean for our clients?
Yes.
Well, we don't want to be too rigid. Like, we look at many various companies. They can be small, it could be large. There's many good companies that are just small and don't have access to the same banking market as we do or the bond market. But they need to be relatively financially strong. Their assets, we only focus on modern assets. But we can look at a lot of various segments. So we have a multi-segment strategy.
Thank you. So, Harold, tell us about how you guys differ.
Well, we do a lot of the same as Ocean Yield, of course. But, of course, we have a diversified asset approach, which means you can, benchmark deals across the different segments to see where you get the best risk return. I think, we always focus on, of course, who's your client, we also try to focus on standardized assets that have an alternative market should your charter default. I think what differs us from some of the others, also being diversified, is that we can also do deals both high and low in the cycle. But how you structure a deal will differ a lot depending on where you think you are in the cycle, because you always have to focus on, of course, the residual value at the end of the charter. So if you're high in the cycle, you will do very long-term, typically 15-year charters, as Marius mentioned, maybe with front-loading of charter payments to get your exposure down quickly. But as Marius said, if you go that long-term, you have to give away options, which basically caps your upside but not your downside. If you're low in the cycle, we're willing to go more short-term, for practical purposes is long-term because it's 7 years. But if you go beyond 7 years, you typically have to give away options. But we think we're low in the cycle. We want to capture the upside at the expiry of the charters. I think also when you're low in the cycle, it makes sense to introduce profit-sharing elements. We just did 8 capesizes, dry bulk carriers, in 2015. Had we bought those vessels 6 months earlier, we would have paid 50% more. And people ask, oh, why on earth do you want to buy vessels low in the market? But the reason we did it was that we were low in the market. We have a decent return on the base rate. And then we have a 33% quarterly profit share for 10 years, which is basically 40 options on the market. And for shipping companies, it's very, very easy to give away options when you're low in the cycle and don't see the end of the light in the tunnel. But now, this week, the rates have actually climbed back up just 5 quarters into the transaction, climbed back up to profit-sharing levels. So that's something we like. I think another important thing is that we enjoy or try to do time charters and have the setup to do time charters. We always say, bareboat charters look good in Excel. But you never know what you're going to get back at the end of the charter. It's a bit like renting out a car. You basically hand over the keys and pray what you get back at the end of the charter is not the rental wreck. So we focus a lot on that, and also we're long-term owners. So of course we're not asset players. So the whole technical management we prefer doing ourselves to keep the vessel values.
Let me just touch on that last point about technical management. How did that really come about? Because that is somewhat unusual for a financial backer to be involved with that. So why don't you touch on that a little bit?
Well, of course, we are part of the John Fredriksen Group. So we we have in-house expertise within the group to do the technical management. And, they have around 150 vessels on water in total that they manage. So they, of course, also have a extremely good call on which managers are performing well. But we think that makes sense, to make sure your asset is in good condition.
Do you insist on it if a ship owner is adamant about self-managing or having one of the majors manage?
We don't insist on it, but we also do bareboat charters. But then there need to be some incentive for the owner to maintain it, maybe through purchase options, which are in the money, or maybe we introduce a purchase obligation. But then it's more a capital arbitrage game where you're just really providing a financing.
Well, thank you. So, Tobias, everyone knows that, of course, you're part of the Oaktree universe, but perhaps a slightly different question for you. How does your platform differ from what Oaktree generally is offering?
Well, Oaktree does many, many different things, obviously. About $100 billion under management. So Oaktree will have funds that invest in marketable securities, go out and invest directly in assets, go out and invest directly into operating companies. What we do specifically is to be a financing solution for companies. So if a capital need is not met by a bank or the equity markets, we will come in, try to be creative, and there are many ways of doing that. You can do it as a loan, you can do it as a sale-leaseback, you can structure different classes of equity, preference shares, and so forth. I think if you compare with the other people here on the panel, we are probably more flexible in exactly how that return is generated. We don't necessarily need a running yield. We like it, obviously, if it's available, but we look more on the overall return of capital on the project.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about sources of capital. Why don't we just continue with you, Tobias? Why are your people, and where are they getting their money from? Who are they?
Well, Oaktree is... It has a separate fundraising platform or organization. So we are investing Oaktree's own capital. If you move forward several years, I would anticipate you would have additional sources of capital at Fleetscape. But part of the attractiveness of being at Fleetscape is that I don't have to focus on the fundraising aspect. I'm solely dedicated on investing in new transactions.
Okay, great. Joe, how about at your shop? Where are you sourcing funds from? Who's behind all this?
Yeah, so our funds come from the Gulf. Our majority owner is the Public Institution for Social Security of Kuwait, which is pretty much what it sounds like. It is the Kuwaiti pension system. But we also manage capital, all of it on a discretionary basis, from other Gulf-based financial institutions. What's kind of interesting is on our new platform, as we call it, Maritime Asset Partners, you know, kind of alongside this Middle Eastern capital is capital from our partners there who are, again, ship owners, including the Blistad organization and other ship financiers, which is a first for us and kind of an exciting development to see people who really know the business putting their money alongside us as we're making these financing transactions.
Do you find your cost of capital to be lower than traditional sources of funding?
I suppose it depends what you mean by traditional. I think we find we're not competitive with traditional bank finance. Our return expectations, I think, as I understand it, are a little bit lower than perhaps a traditional, you know, PE fund return or hedge fund-like return, which I would benchmark, you know, generally speaking, starting in the high teens and moving up from there as a general matter. You know, we're happier kind of in the, let's call it, high single digits to low teens as a kind of bandwidth. That's where we'd like to be. And one of the things that we do, or at least try to do as we're going about structuring transactions, is to trade, if you will, upside for additional protection on the downside to kind of slot in to that return bandwidth, that kind of consistency, kind of preservation of capital and current yield being our you know, main focus points.
Marius, how about you? How do you approach this?
We have access to a wide range of capital sources. Of course, being a stock-listed company, the equities or common equity is part of that. We raised $100 million last autumn. We use bond financing actively. But of course, the main portion is the banks. The banks love this business model because, number one, they have the mortgage in the vessel. They get assignment of a long-term contract, and they have our strong balance sheet backing the deal. So bank financing, typical bank financing, is the majority part of that. And that's also part of the edge because we have very good relationship with our banks. We have a key banks, banking group of 11, 12 banks that we're actively discussing new projects with. And our total banking group consists of many more. So we have access to fairly cheap capital and they're able to support us. And that's why we are able to provide a very attractive product to our clients again.
Okay. Well, Harold, how are you going about this?
We always say we're capital agnostics. We always take whatever is cheapest. But I think if you look, we also have traditionally funded ourselves with bank debt, and we have very good access to bank debt. I think bank debt is good for a company like us. And also, we always say you should repay your loans if you have amortizing or depreciating assets. You should also have amortizing loans. So historically, we have funded ourselves with bank debt. We have around $2 billion in bank debt currently. We work with around 20 banks. We also access the bond market. We have 4 bonds outstanding, 2 convertibles in the U.S., and also 2 bonds in the Norwegian market. And that's sort of a way to stretch the fairly steep profile on the bank loans. But we also, it depends on a bit on which deal you're doing. We also tap other sources of funding. Last year we did a deal on 2 19,000 TEU container vessels. That's the largest container vessels out there. That's a less liquid market for chartering. So we didn't. First of all, we didn't want to take any sort of refinancing risk on that. So what we did there was we actually did a Chinese lease financing, which is really a competing product to us. So what we did was we did a 15-year back-to-back Chinese lease financing, matching the term of the charters with MSC. You know, it takes away your residual risk. I think another interesting feature is that that whole lease financing is non-recourse to Ship Finance International, the parent company. So basically what we do is we put in 15% equity upfront, and then we have 15 years of cash flow. And there's also a put-call feature at the end of it. And also, you know, coming back to what Mario said with bank financing, one thing that we do that nobody else talks about is that all our bank loans are down in our subsidiaries. We have sort of a view on providing guarantees on those bank loans from the parent company. The only debt in the parent company is the bond loans, the four bond loans. So we, some facilities we guarantee fully if we think it's a very low risk. Others, we only provide a limited guarantee. And of our, $2 billion bank debt, less than half of it is guaranteed by the parent. And the reason you do this is to prevent a full cross default in case you have a default on one of the charters. So basically, it allows you to, as we say, chop off a leg if you, if you have a default without jeopardizing the parent company.
Thank you. Actually, Marius, I want to go back to something you mentioned. You talked about 15-year tenors. You also talked about having bank financing as a primary source of capital. How do you match the tenors between your bank loans and the terms of the deals you're structuring?
Well, we don't. So we do take refinancing risk. That's part of the business risk that we're facing. But the bank debt is typically amortized quicker than the lease profile. So we're actually building equity in our projects. So typically the refinancing risk is quite small when they are a few years out, because then they've repaid a lot of the bank debt. What typically happens actually is that we are able to get increased leverage further out that actually boosts our equity returns. Okay. So that's part of the upside in our business case.
Thank you. Actually, I want to go back to Harold, one thing you touched on. You mentioned Chinese leasing structure that you recently deployed, but you also described it, of course, as a competing product. Other than your fellow panelists, what other competing products do you see in the market?
Yeah, I think in the booming days, when everything was booming, the bond market was really a competitor, especially in the offshore space. You see maybe U.S. private placement, which is something we also looked at as a funding source. But the Chinese are, when you see the banks today focusing on the core clients like us, where we say we're a big fish in a small pond, as the shipping finance market is. But I think you see a lot of our competitors having less access to bank financing, and I was in a conference in China last year by China Exim, the Export-Import Bank of China, and there were 17 Chinese leasing houses there, willing to still provide financing to many of the players that don't get financing today. I think you also see some interesting Japanese structures, like the Japanese operating lease, which is extremely cheap. And where you also get long tenors, that's something we also looked into. I was just in Japan in January, and there seems to be a good interest on that product. But I would say historically, the bond market has really been a main competitor, and of course the banks, providing financing. When markets are good, you always see a lot of banks coming to the market providing high leverage on high asset values. Which is interesting, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's quite right. You touched on a few things. I mean, at Watson Farley, we are seeing in the Far East quite a bit of Chinese leasing and what we would call JOLCOs, the Japanese operating leases, JOLCO leasings. Yeah. But you also pointed out, I think at the end of your comments, that when times are good, the people come sniffing around that ordinarily aren't there.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of touches on what you also mentioned with the bond market. Over the course of my career, I've seen a lot of things come and go. First with great fanfare and success, followed usually by, shall we say, lesser success. And it's very difficult to gauge how long a particular product is going to be valuable in the market. And so I guess, Tobias, the question I have for you is, You know, who do you really see right now as your customer base, and where do you really aim for at this point in time, and where do you see it going over, let's say, the next 18 months to maybe 3 years?
Just to go back to your earlier question, I think our biggest competitor has always been owner's own equity. There's always an alternative of making an investment from your own cash, your own capital. That has been the biggest hindrance from getting a transaction done for us. I'm sorry, what was your question?
No, that's actually an interesting point, because this owner's equity being a competitor to you, I'm surprised to hear that. Because generally it seems that in the shipping markets, as in other markets, there is, especially in difficult times, there has been some difficulty in getting equity injections. But I guess my question to you was, where do you see yourself really aiming for? Who do you view as your customer base? Is there a particular segment in the market? Is there a particular type of asset that you're interested in?
So we are very focused on what's the rationale for this ship floating and the company that we're dealing with existing. We're very focused on do we like the counterparty, do we like the trades, and if there's a rationale for that happening, we will find a capital solution for that project. That basically means if there's a if there's a shipping company with five ships in the water, they want to buy a sixth ship and trade at spot, that's not really a good match for us. But if there's an underlying rationale for it, we're there to be very creative. I would also say, going back to the issues of the Asian leasing houses, they obviously are very competitive on new buildings. I don't think any of us can be competitive with that product if they want to go after that market. And that means that we will therefore focus on ships that are on the water or projects that are a little bit more structured, a little bit more unusual than the plain vanilla new building orders.
Great. Joe, how are things at Wafra on that front?
Yeah, well, look, as we look to the likely market for the different things that we're doing, I think on the one hand, it's probably no surprise that the might be described as the quality, smaller, medium-sized enterprises that are, let's say, today underbanked are, generally speaking, a prime, source of potential transactions for us. But perhaps at least initially surprising to me, I think some of the larger, well-established, frankly, well-banked organizations that are maybe looking for, instead of, to use an analogy, instead of an off-the-rack suit or even made-to-measure, a more kind of bespoke solution, we think is actually a potential growth opportunity for us as well.
And Marius?
We focus on a broad range of clients, smaller ones, bigger ones. We have a multi-segment strategy. We have looked at all kinds of various shipping segments. We also, even in the autumn, we looked at cruise, ferries, those type of assets. So we try to expand and create a portfolio that is very diversified in order to reduce the risk that we are facing. But we have been very focused on the new building market so far. Perhaps now we're focusing more on the vessels on the water for many different clients.
Okay. Let me, maybe ask Harold the same question before we move on to our last topic. Tell us about your view on this.
Yeah, I think there will always be a place for the likes of us. I mean, if you look, for instance, the container lines, they're very active in leasing and have typically owned 50% and leased in 50% of the fleet, and it's a way for them to manage the fleet, because once you buy a vessel, you basically take on a 25-year commitment, but if you lease it, you take on a 10-year commitment. I think in today's market is quite interesting, with less competition. We can finally get the returns we always wanted on the top names. We did three container vessels to Maersk last year, top name. We also did two new building product tankers with 7+5-year options to Phillips 66, triple B plus rated, with the returns we wanted. So I think it's an interesting time to have lots of cash to invest.
Yeah, I think it is. I think the ability to fill gaps in the market that can't be supplied by, as we've discussed earlier, the more traditional sources is an important add-on to this industry, because it's a capital-intensive industry. There's no question about that. We have just about a minute and a half left, so I'm going to ask you each, and I'll just go right down the line. What is the number one thing that a customer should expect to hear from you that would be different than, say, they would hear if they were approaching a bank for a financing? Tobias?
Different, and it really is a completely different product. So we are, I think, very often a replacement for equity rather than a replacement for debt. So it's a different conversation, and we want to, we really want to get much deeper into the conversation of what the company is doing, how this project is going to work out for all parties involved.
Excellent. Harold, what differentiates you?
I think it's really the flexibility, and also that you are actually willing to take a residual risk. You know, there is no balloon payment at the end of the loan.
Excellent. Joe?
Look, we're really focused on the owner, operator, the client, or customer's track record in managing these assets through a variety of cycles, and we'll want to understand how they've done that and on a very granular basis, right? So we'll want someone who's willing, able, and ready to demonstrate how they've handled their particular niche or niches. You know, sometimes folks focus on a few different things in the markets over time.
And Marius?
I guess also the flexibility and also are able to tailor-made a product that fits our client's need. For example, if the clients are very focused on low cash break-in levels, we are able to structure a lease that fits that. Otherwise, we could structure a lease that have a lower cost of capital. So we're able to work with the client in order to meet their requirements.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much. Does anyone in the audience have any questions for any of our panelists? Not seeing. Oh, we have one right back here. Could you raise your hand again so it can be seen? There we are.
Gentlemen, any Jones Act vessels, any activity there from any of your organization?
Domestic coastwise trade shipping, guys.
Do you want to just go down?
Don't all rush at once.
No, but we previously owned a bond towards American Shipping Company. We're a large bond owner. That was part of the legacy assets I would put into our fleet. But we don't have any. We have a small part left, but no particular focus on that segment.
I would say, Jones Act is a very good business and something we definitely are interested in. I think that the challenge that Jones Act will have for all of us here is how do you assess the residual value of a Jones Act vessel? It's very, very difficult. So if you just look at a very specific contract or a very specific trade, it's great. But what's the value of a 25-year-old Jones Act product tanker?
I think there's too much political risk in the whole Jones Act trade because the vessels cost three times more. And, you know, if there is a change in politics, what do you do with it?
Joe, you want to give the last all-American view of this?
We're open for business.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you all for coming.